mistaken for 1 Samuel, chapter 17, verses 41 to 51. This can be found on page 289 of the Church Bibles. 1 Samuel, chapter 17, verse 41. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds and to the wild animals." David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds, to the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down onto the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling of stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. And David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from the sheath. After he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Good evening. First of all, thank you. It's a really lovely, sunny, glorious evening out there. And you've chosen to be here to listen to me talk about people killing each other. So thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here tonight. We're looking at David fighting Goliath, fighting the giant. And I'm a dad to my son Henry, who's a year and a half old, so I'm pretty familiar with this story. I've read this several times very recently from Henry's children's Bible. Although I noticed in the version that's in Henry's Bible, there are a couple of omissions. It's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. In particular, the verse about David decapitating Goliath's corpse. They have in any case. Perhaps this is the first time you have encountered this passage since you were a child. Maybe you're hearing about it now as an adult for the first time, and if so, you might be shocked at some of the details that were not in the children's version of the story that you heard about. This story is not really a child-friendly story. It's visceral, there's tension, there's drama, there are armies of warriors, there's action, there's the heat of battle, there's violence, there's gore. If you added in Naked Ladies and Dragons, you'd have a very good episode of Game of Thrones. And yet, there is a version of it in every children's Bible. One of the Old Testament stories that captures children's imaginations, like Noah the Ark or Jonah and the Whale. It's one of those that we see in every single book. Why is that? So, I think it's because even in a child-friendly format, there's something about this story that speaks to us on a fundamental level, and it touches on emotions that children can intuitively relate to. They don't need further explanation. So our passage tonight is not a wordy, pithy letter of Paul to one of the new emerging churches in the New Testament that we can spend ages unpacking and looking at this choice of words in a given sentence. This is basically an action film in the Bible, and this is something that even a child can get to grips with. And I think there's a real risk that if we sanitise the story for a family audience, it loses some of its power and some of its impact. And I also think there's a risk that if we become so used to hearing it in this format and don't look to the actual biblical text, then it sort of normalises what are pretty extraordinary events. And they no longer have an effect on us. They no longer amaze us. They no longer shock us. So it's good to take a fresh look at the original passage like we're doing tonight. And I think the best way to do that, to get to the heart of what it's actually talking about, is to sort of imagine as if we were there, like David, immerse ourselves in what's going on. But first, before we do that, let's have a look at a little bit of background. So, our passage tonight takes place during the reign of King Saul. This is when the Israelites were in the Holy Land, and they were having this protracted, ongoing, low-level conflict, if you like, with a rival tribe called the Philistines. Now, the Philistines didn't believe in the one true God, the Israelites. They had a bunch of gods that they believed in, several deities. And their conflict with the Israelites was as much about religion as it was about gaining ground, gaining territory, and having that. Now, the Bible tells us they had these series of running conflicts and battles, including one in which the Philistines actually stole the Ark of the Covenant. And so basically things were bubbling along for a while and brewing and coming to a head. There was a big conflict on the horizon. And we know this if we look at the start of chapter 17. It tells us that the Philistines were gathering their forces for war. So this is all-out war about to happen. This is not just those who stole each other there. And the Israelites and the Philistines both sent armies to meet each other along the Valley of Elah. So we've got the Israelites army on one side on one hill, we've got the valley in the middle, and then the Philistines on the other side of the valley. And this is where our baddie turns up, Goliath. He steps onto the scene. He's called a champion. So he is basically Philistines' prize fighter. He's their number one warrior who turns up. And so he's described as a pretty tall guy. He's said to be 6 cubits and a span tall. So a cubit is basically from your elbow to the tip of your finger. That's a cubit, 6 of those. And a span is the width of your hand. So you can imagine that's pretty tall. It equates to roughly 9'9", or 3 metres. And I did get digging at this because it sounded a little bit far-fetched. And if you actually look at the Dead Sea Scrolls, which are the oldest surviving manuscripts of some of the Old Testament books, they actually say 4 cubits in span, so slightly less, but that's still 6'9", over 2 metres. So that might be slightly more realistic, but whatever the case, this was a massive guy. He was a giant. And he comes quite intimidating figure as well. So we're given a description of him in verses 5 and 7. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armour of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels, which is about 58 kilos. And his legs wore bronze greaves and a bronze javelin slung on his back. The spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, so it's that thick, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels, which is nearly 7 kilos. And then we're told this quite a funny little snippet on the end of that, his shield bearer went ahead of him. So there's feel for that guy. So some guy carrying this man's shield in front of him into battle. Imagine what that must have meant. And we're told that for 40 days, so the two armies have been camped here on the side of the valley for 40 days, facing each other, and this tension of room and room. And for 40 days, Goliath comes out every night, every morning, and challenges these guys and says, I challenge you to choose one man to come out and fight. And if that man beats me, then we will serve the Israelites. And if I beat him, the Israelites will serve the Philistines. And I keep saying, I defy the armies of Israel. And he's using that as a bit of a taunt to the Israelites, because they think that they believe, they know that God is sovereign over them. They are servants of God, and so the army of Israel is the army of God. And so to defy the army of God is to defy God himself. So all of this is happening. Where's David? David, he was probably still a teenager. He's got three older brothers who are all with the Israelite army on the front line. And David isn't fighting on the front line. He's been sort of allocated a job as a bit of a runner. He's going backwards and forwards between his father's homestead and going to the front line, bringing food for his brothers and just sort of checking on their well-being and putting back to his dad back in Bethlehem. And on this particular day, we're looking at he's sent by his father to bring food and supplies and to check on his brothers. And while he's there at the front line, he hears Goliath shouting this taunt at the Israelites. And he says, I'm not himself. Someone has to do something. We can't just let him go on speaking like that. So he goes to the king, he goes to Saul. And Saul turns him down, but then he's convinced when David tells him that actually, you know what, I'm a pretty tough guy. I've fought off lions and bears from my dad's flock of sheep. He says, your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord, who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, who rescued me from the hand of this Philistine. And so Saul says, okay, go on then, we'll let you have a go. He's a bit scared and afraid to confront Goliath himself. So the fact that somebody else is willing to do it for him, he sort of overlooks the fact that this guy's still just a teenager. And he puts his armor on him. But David refuses to wear it. He says, he's not used to it. And that's probably because he's just a warrior of the shepherds. And this armor is meant for the free willing man. It's probably pretty heavy and bulky. And instead, we're told, takes a staff from his hand, and he chose five small stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of the shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, approached the first. So, no armor whatsoever, goes out onto the field of the battle on his own. So, let's picture the scene, and it might help if you close your eyes now to sort of try and visualize this. Don't know if not, but there are two wide lines, thousands and thousands of soldiers lined up along these two ridges across the valley. And things are reaching a fever pitch. We've been told that the Israelite army was going out to its battle positions and shouting the war cry. So they're getting ready to fight. And we've got Goliath breaking ranks, coming out of the Philistine lines, striding towards the Israelites. And he's shouting, he's goading, he's shouting his taunts. And then out of nowhere, from the Israelites, is not a man, but a small boy, probably in his late teens. He's got a staff in his hand and a sling. He's not wearing any armor at all. He doesn't really cut a very impressive figure. And the pair split off against each other. And then there's this fantastic exchange that they have with one another, in which we've read it just now. Goliath says, I'm a dog that you come at me with sticks. I think it's quite a funny joke. Stick and dog thing. And then he curses David and he says, come here and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. And the great thing about David is he's good at taking Goliath's words and twisting them and throwing them right back in space. It's a bit of smack talk goes on in the valley. So David says to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands. I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, just like God said. And the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. So there we are. The fight is set. This sort of final taunt from David sets Goliath off. He starts running at him. David takes up his sling, launches a stone, it hits Goliath square in the forehead, actually penetrates his skull, goes into his head, and he's knocked down flat on the ground. Maybe still alive, maybe dead, we don't know. David rushes over, takes up Goliath's own sword, takes him out of the sheath, and kills him with it, finishes him off, and then chops his head off. Lifts it up, shows it to everybody. The Philistines turn to him and are routed by the Israelite army. It's quite impressive, I think. And you might be sitting there thinking, David chopped off his head after he was dead. That's horrible, that's brutal. That's horrific. How can you do such a thing like that? And I would say, I would caution against sort of applying our current moral framework to that sort of thing. We could have a really long ethics debate about this. But basically, we live in a lovely, peaceful part of the world where we haven't had conflict for a very long time. And we get very sensitized to violence and death. But I think the point is, in killing and making an example of Goliath, what David has done is he's not only saved his entire people who would have been killed, raped, their houses looted, he's also minimised further casualties by preventing a long protracted battle between the Philistines and the Israelites, raw attrition. So I personally, I was trying to forgive him. I think we could have a long and interesting debate about that. So what does this action story actually mean? Is there any substance, or is this just entertainment for us? I think there are a few lessons to be drawn from this, and I've put out a few. Firstly, when you step out in faith with God standing behind you, nothing can stand in your way. And I think we've come to use the term David and Goliath as a bit of a byword for an underdog, a weakling, or perhaps somebody really powerful. Often it's a bully, somebody who's known. And that's probably what appeals to children about the story. I think they can relate to that. You know, everything goes on in the playground at school, they think, oh, great, it's the little guy standing up to the big man. And that, it is that in a sense, but that doesn't quite cover the full meaning. I think that's because God's been taken out of that meaning when we use it in that way. Because what David says in this passage makes it absolutely crystal clear that his victory would be nothing without God. It's all thanks to God. He says, this day the Lord will deliver you into my hands. All those gathered here will know this. It is not by my sword or spear. It is not by the sword or spear that the Lord says. The battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into my hands. Basically, the take-home message there is, if it's the Lord's will, we will overcome, regardless of how strong our desire. And this is the thing that we see quite again and again. In the Old Testament, particularly in Psalms and Proverbs, there are lots of passages that hammer home this message. But there's one in Psalm 18, and I'm going to pick up on one verse in particular, verse 28. This whole psalm is attributed to David. You know, maybe he was actually writing about this day that could be Goliath. But he says, you, Lord, keep my lamp burning. My God turns my darkness into light. With your help, I can advance against the troop. With my God, I can stay in the war. So it's all thanks to God. Secondly, it doesn't matter how seemingly badly equipped you are. or how well equipped your enemies are for the task, God will give you the tools you need to overcome. Let's look at Goliath for a minute. I mean, he's a really impressive warrior, really intimidating figure. All of the Israelites were scared of him. He was really well equipped. He had a fantastic suit of armor. He had brilliant weapons. His armor was so heavy he needed somebody else to help him carry it. And yet he was killed by David with a single blow. Gone. David, on the other hand, he only had his sling and his staff, but that was all he needed. And in fact, that was just what he needed to conquer Goliath. Thirdly, rely on your God-given strengths and don't try to fix someone else's recipe for success, even if God's not in it. Especially if God's not in it. David knew his strengths, and that Saul's armor wasn't going to help him. It was going to restrict him. He wouldn't be able to use his sling like he needed to. And in fact, when we look at Saul himself, that armor didn't help him much either. In turn from God, God was not in it. And Saul ended up killing himself with that very same sword. So he ended up being undone rather than the thing he saved. And I think, lastly, it's okay to be afraid when we're confronted by something that seems overwhelming. We don't really get insight into how David's feeling throughout this whole episode, other than perhaps a slight hint of righteous anger when he hears out what Elias would say to the Israelites. But he does act very confident. So we can take from that that he's very assured in what he's doing and what he's saying. In reality, he was probably terrified. On the inside, I can imagine he was trembling. Imagine facing off against somewhere between 2 meters, 3 meters, going out in full armor. I would be quaking on my heels. But that doesn't mean that David lacked faith. It's the fact that he continued in the face of that fear that demonstrates that he was faithful to God and he thought that God would be faithful to him as a proof that he was right. And we can compare that with a New Testament account. If you look at Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus was maybe not afraid because he knew all of the situation and David perhaps, but he was apprehensive about what was about to happen to him in the face of what was to be his Goliath, which was his crucifixion. Jesus said, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death." And he also asked God, "May this cup be taken from me?" And yet, in the face of that, staring that down, he said to God, "The Father, let me not as I will, but as he will." So he carried on regardless. And I want you to finish tonight by sort of flipping this around a little bit and posing a question to you. And I don't want to get you to shout out your answers, but just to think about it really. What is your life? David's life was a gigantic Philistine warrior who was running towards the head of the invading army. What is yours? You know, it could be any number of things. It's not necessarily a person. It could be to do with work. Maybe it's anxiety or feeling good enough. You can't measure up. Maybe it's a good decision that you've got to make. Putting it off, putting it on the back burner. Maybe applying for promotion or a new job. Maybe there's pressure on you and you don't feel like you can cope with it. You can't meet the deadlines. It works quite up to the scratch. It could be to do with relationships. Maybe you've got some issues with anger, controlling that, and you've pressed it away, you've suppressed it. Maybe it's about opening up to people and having intimacy with them. And it could be other things like addictions. Most people struggle with things like alcohol abuse, pornography, drugs, all of these things to be our Goliaths. And what we need to do is take our first step in calling out like David, recognizing the privilege. And David turned up to the front line on that day. He immediately said, "That's not right. I've got to do something about it." Second, it's about stepping out in faith to confront it. So David exposed himself. He went beyond the line to confront the line fist to fist. And then lastly, we've got behind you, as David knew he had, taken up on a defeated good. Because if God is in it, he's with you. There's nothing to come in. I'm going to finish there and come back to Helen in a minute. Perhaps in the meantime, you can take a few minutes and just think about that question. What is your